Hello, I am Randy Andrews, and today I'll be discussing The Goonies from 1985. I'll discuss the cast, the background, the technical aspects on the film, and of course the score by Dave Grusin. So pack your bags and come on board for an adventure. Soundtrack Alley starts now. This movie has been with me for a very long time. I first saw it when it was on television, and throughout that time period only on television and with commercials. It wasn't until about 15 years ago that I finally saw the uncut version and found so many extra tidbits for the film and was amazed and impressed. So let's get things started by talking about the cast.
My dad tells me the truth. You know what he said? He told me that One-Eyed Willie and his bunch were down there for 5-6 years. And they were digging all these tunnels and caves, setting booby traps.
Booby traps.
That's what I said, setting booby traps so that anybody that tried to get in there would die. And then you know what he did? He killed all of his men.
Why?
Why'd he kill all of them?
Well, because he didn't want them to get to his treasure.
Yeah, wait a minute, Mikey. But if he killed all his men, how did the map or the story get out?
See, I asked my dad the same question. He said one of the guys must have gotten out with the map and...
Hey, Mike,
and the...
I believe.
According to Sean Austin, he was allowed to keep the treasure map used in the film. Several years later, his mother, Patty Duke, discovered it, thought it was just a crinkled piece of paper, and threw it in the trash. When the Fratelli brothers argue... Anne Ramsey really slaps Robert Davi. She was told to hit him as hard as she could, and she did. During Chunk's confession scene, two things he admits to are pushing his sister Eddie down the stairs and blaming it on the dog, and stealing his Uncle Max's toupee. Cohen's real-life sister was named Eddie, and he has an uncle named Max. Jeff Cohen got the chicken pox after he got the role of Chunk. He showed up to the set anyway, afraid that they would replace him otherwise. Robert Davi, who was a trained opera singer, came up with the idea that he sings to Sloth from Giacomo's Piccini opera, Madama Butterfly. During filming, Martha Plimpton made a bet with the director, Richard Donner, that she would stop biting her nails. Donner paid up several years later while they were doing the DVD commentary. Near the end of the movie, Data says something in Chinese and Chinese subtitles are shown. The subtitles translate to, "He is a big, strong man." John Matuszak's makeup took 5 hours to complete. One of the eyes, which was out of place on the face, was mechanically operated off-screen by remote control. Someone would count down, and Matuszak would blink his other eye in synchronization. The cast was told not to get him wet in scenes outside of the pirate ship. Unfortunately, he got wet, delaying filming for an entire day. Jeff Cohen thought of his mother dying to generate tears during his confession scene with the Fratellis. The last name of the brothers who are chasing the Goonies are Fratelli, and Fratelli means brothers in Italian. This was also Josh Brolin's big screen debut, and now when you think about this summer, it's his big screen debut as Thanos. So that's very exciting. The late Corey Haim auditioned for the role of Mouth, but the role was given to Corey Feldman instead. At the time, the two Coreys hadn't met, but they were later cast together in The Lost Boys and became best friends, starring in 6 more movies together. In License to Drive, Feldman auditioned for the lead role of Les Anderson, but lost it to Haim. John Matuszak, who is Sloth, was wearing a t-shirt of the Oakland Raiders, a team he once played on. On the DVD commentary, Jeff Cohen, who plays Chunk, claims that the confession of puking off the theater balcony is not based on anything in real life. This is actually incorrect. The basis for the theater story was a real-life prank pulled off by none other than executive producer Steven Spielberg while growing up in Phoenix, Arizona. Who knew? Though they were divorcing at the time, Patty Duke claims that she and John Austin held hands and sobbed through the entire film when they saw it for the first time. Patty is Sean Austin's mother, and John is his stepfather. Ma Fratelli and her boys are based on the early 20th century legend of Kate Barker, known as Ma Barker and her boys. For one line of dialogue, Corey Feldman had to dub in the name of the fast food chain Godfather's Pizza when Straw Hat Pizza refused participation in the film. Mikey mentions Michael Jackson going over to Chunk's house in one scene. In real life, Corey Feldman, who played Mouth, was close friends with the singer, and the two later became estranged. Feldman attended Michael Jackson's memorial service along with fellow child actor Macaulay Culkin after his death in June 2009. In the storybook of the film, One-Eyed Willie's backstory is told by Francis Fratelli, when the Fratellis take the doubloon from Chunk. One-Eyed Willie, whose real name is William B. Portabel, was a court jester before becoming an ingenious pirate. When he was banished from 5 Spanish courts for his practical jokes and formed a band of pirates, whom marauded hundreds of the king's ships and accumulated a treasure worth millions. But Willie's ship, Inferno, was attacked by 3 of the king's ships, and Willie steered his ship into a hidden underground cavern and was sealed within by the cannon fire from the British. Willie and his men had spent a couple of years trying to repair the ship and had built underground caves with weird booby traps to protect the treasure, and one of Willie's men escaped to tell Willie's story, which became a legend. According to his choreography, Corey Feldman and Martha Plimpton did not get along at all. At one point in the movie, the character played by Sean Austin cries out, "Holy Mackenzie!" Sean Austin's brother is Mackenzie Austin. Corey Feldman also met fellow child actor and soon-to-be best friend Corey Haim while auditioning, mentioned earlier. The real-life banter between Joe Pantoliano and Robert Davi during their joint audition won them the roles for the movie. In the original version of the film, the woman hired by Mikey's brother is a Hispanic named Rosalita, and Mouth helps Mrs. Walsh by translating her commands into Spanish. In the Spanish version of this film, Rosalita becomes an Italian woman named Rosanna. The Italian used by the Spanish dubber is much better than the Spanish used by Corey Feldman. Heather Langenkamp auditioned for the role of Andy. Steven Spielberg and Richard Donner felt that she had given a great audition and was the right physical type for the role. However, she was 20 years old at the time. The script described her as being 17 years old, and both Spielberg and Donner felt that Langenkamp was too old for the role. Langenkamp was angry about it for years. At the same time, Spielberg also felt bad about turning her down. 7 years later, Spielberg would offer Langenkamp the role of Dr. Ellie Sattler in Jurassic Park as a way of apologizing to her, but she turned it down and she was about to star in Wes Craven's New Nightmare. The dead FBI agent is played by the stunt performer Ted Grossman, if people are familiar with that work. All of the younger characters' last names end with an N. Austin, Brolin, Cohen, Feldman, Green, Plimpton, and Kwan. And the non-Goonie, Troy, which is Steve Anton. Anne Ramsey would later star in The River Pirates as the Hag. It was one of Anne Ramsey's final acting roles prior to her death on August 11, 1988, at only the age of 59. Both John Matsuzak and Joe Pantoliano made guest appearances on MASH during season 10. Coincidence or not, one of the Goonies is Brandon Walsh, played by Josh Brolin. Several years later, in 1990, the same character, Brandon Walsh, appeared again on Beverly Hills 90210, a famous TV series, this time played by Jason Priestley. A year before the film's release, Robert Davi and Joe guest starred in Heart to Heart, Always Elizabeth. Mary Ellen Trainor, who plays Mrs. Walsh, would later go on to play a police psychologist in Lethal Weapon, which is also directed by Richard Donner. At the end, where the families are reunited, Jeff Cohen's mom plays Chunk's mom, which is kind of cool. Now let's look into the background on the film.
Don't you realize? The next time you see Sky, it'll be over another town. The next time you take a test, it'll be in some other school. Our parents, they want the best of stuff for us. But right now they gotta do what's right for them. Cause it's their time. Their time! Up there. Down here, it's our time. It's our time down here. That's all over the second we ride up Troy's bucket.
Production designer J. Michael Riva said in a National Public Radio interview that before shooting the first scenes with the prop map, he thought it looked good, but not old enough. So in his hotel room, he aged it with coffee, and when he couldn't find paint, his own blood. Wow. Richard Donner kept both One Eye Willie's head and a model for the ship, which is cool. The pirate ship was entirely real. All the shots were filmed in the ship. After the film, it was offered to anyone who would take it. No one wanted it, so the ship was scrapped. One-Eyed Willie's skull was made from real bone. One-Eyed Willie's ship, the Inferno, was 105 feet long and took 2.5 months to construct. It was modeled after Errol Flynn's ship in the Seahawk. The sails required more than 7,000 square feet of material, the largest measured 30 feet by 60 feet. Some of the ship's rigging was recycled from the Pirates of the Caribbean ship at Disneyland, which was being renovated at the time. The cast was not allowed to see the pirate ship before the scene was shot, as director Richard Donner wanted to catch their genuine reactions at the size and scope of it. According to a website dedicated to the film in 2002, it was mentioned on the cast list that the skeleton of One-Eyed Willie was a man called Rule Wu, whom died from lead poisoning. The script even gives One-Eyed Willie's full name as William B. Portobello. This resembles Portobello, a Panamanian port which has long been home to pirates. The bats were made of crumpled black pieces of crepe paper that were shot out of an air cannon, which is funny. June 7th was officially declared Goonies Day by the mayor of Astoria, where the movie was filmed, during the 25th anniversary celebration in 2010. Mostly shot in sequence, the total production took 5 months, which is pretty fast. The Goonies Oath that was cut goes as follows. I will never betray my goon doc friends. We will stick together until the whole world ends. Through heaven and hell and nuclear war, good pals like us will stick like tar. In the city or the country or the forest or the boonies, I am proudly declared a fellow goonie. The name Rube G can be seen painted on the contraption that opens the yard gate for Chunk near the beginning of the movie. This is a reference to Rube Goldberg, the Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist who drew whimsical machines that achieved simple results in difficult ways. Now Richard Donner unintentionally started giggling when they filmed the scene when which Chunk started crying, when the ice cream gets taken off him by Jake, and it was kept in the film. If you listen carefully, you can hear the director giggling off the screen when Jake takes the plastic spoon off Chunk and Chunk starts to cry. According to Richard Donner, in an interview with the directors and producer Steven Spielberg, he instructed the cast members to act cold and distant toward Donner on the last week of filming, which puzzled them. Shortly after filming wrapped, Donner went to his beach house in Hawaii, ran into a frenzied neighbor who took up his entire day. When he arrived home, the entire cast was there to celebrate with a cookout. Spielberg flew them over to Hawaii on the promise that they not speak a word of the surprise to Donner, which prompted them to act the way they were on the last week of filming. All the companions were referred to by their nicknames, and their real names were either rarely mentioned or not mentioned at all. Michael Walsh was Mickey, Clark Devereaux, Mouth, Richard Wang, Data, Brandon Walsh, Brand, Lawrence Cohen, Chunk, Andrea Teresa Carmichael was Andy, and Stephanie Steinbrenner, Steph, Lotney Fratelli, Sloth. More than 900,000 gallons of water were used in the movie, which isn't a surprise. When NBC broadcast the film, they added a scene of Sloth and Chunk following the trail of the other Goonies, but cut out 20 minutes. Despite the fact that no uncut version has been released on home media when basic cable local stations air the film, the version also includes both the stop and shop and the giant octopus sequences cut from the final version. The newspaper article, photo of Chester Copperpot, is actor Keenan Wynn. The oil substance shot out of Data's slick shoes were made of glycerin, water, and food coloring. I love this antidote. The screenplay was written by Chris Columbus, who also wrote Gremlins. There is an Easter egg to Gremlins. When Chunk calls the police, the officer says, "This call is like the prank about creatures that multiply when you throw water on them," which is great. The arcade game you see Chunk playing in the pizza place at the beginning of the film is Cliffhanger. The grappling hook belt buckle is a nod to Hayao Miyazaki's The Castle of Cagliostro and the main character Lupin, who uses it. Spielberg was a huge fan of the movie, calling it one of the greatest adventure movies. Darren and Ruth Sutherland can appreciate that. The black and white movie that Mouth watches on his TV in the first scene is the car chase scene from Some Like It Hot, directed by Billy Wilder. In the storybook of the film, there was a scene that was not in the film. Mikey, Mouth, Brand, Data, Andy, and Steph discover a room with a dangling skeleton in a pirate's costume. The Goonies had to tickle the skeleton's elbow, which would point to one of three tunnels where they must go. Steph tickles the skeleton's elbow and it points to the middle cave, and the Goonies continue the search for One-Eyed Willie's treasure. Chris Columbus and Steven Spielberg Chris Columbus sold Steven Spielberg the script along with Gremlins, but his career didn't really take off until the massive success of Home Alone. After having worked with Steven Spielberg on Gremlins, Spielberg produced the next two Chris Columbus films that he scripted, which was Goonies, and it was based upon an idea that Spielberg had, and then Young Sherlock Holmes, which was Columbus's idea, which altogether was 2 years working on those three films. Also, Steven Spielberg directed at least one scene in this movie. And this is kind of goofy, but Chester Copperpot's skeleton was made from plastic. The original poster art, not used on the videotape box, featured the cast dangling from a feet of another with the top of one hanging onto a rock. Some of the newspaper ads featured slightly different artwork with the characters drawn in a different order from the top to the bottom. When Sloth rips his outer shirt, he reveals a Superman t-shirt, accompanied by the John Williams Superman theme. Director Richard Donner directed Superman and parts of Superman 2. In Mad Magazine's Mickey Looks Through at His House are 208 July 1979 and 124 January 1969 and 254 December 1984. And this issue can be seen in the stop and snack scene eventually cut from the film. Mad Magazine made a parody out of this movie in the late 1985. In the scene where Chunk breaks the water cooler bottle, his line is, "I got it! I got it! I don't got it!" is a nod to the film High Anxiety. The football players from Astoria High School had to shoot the tackling sequence in the opening scene 13 times, explaining why the receiver is so muddy when he jumps up from being tackled, and later had to sign papers to keep from being credited. If they were in fact credited, they would have to accept wages from their contribution to the film and therefore would not be able to play football on the college level. This was a wise decision since the one who was being tackled went on to do an impressive future in college football. In 2017, the LEGO Dimensions video game for the PS4, LEGO Dimensions The Goonies Level Pack, was released. In the trailer for the game, Excalibur Batman tells the story of the Goonies, and is seen giving Sloth a Batman costume, and is seen playing on the bone piano. In the game, Sloth and Chunk set off into the caves and go after the other Goonies, and the Fratellis, whom are searching for One-Eyed Willie's ship. When Chunk is hiding from the Fratellis in the refrigerator with the dead body, he sneezes loudly. As Mama Fratelli exits the room, she unwittingly says Gesundheit, the German word for health, used as a response to the sneeze. This was also selected into the National Film Registry in 2017 for being culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. The name of the plumbing company that Mouth's dad owns is Mad Jack's Plumbing. It can be seen on the van in the opening sequence. In the 1988 ITV broadcast of the film, in the scene which Chunk meets Sloth, the bit which Sloth growls at Chunk was cut because the ITV network felt that it would frighten younger viewers watching the film. And it was cut from Chunk to saying, "Hi, sir, my name is Lawrence," to Sloth giggling and bouncing in his chair in excitement, and Chunk shouting, "Get me out of here!" In the scene which Mikey finds One-Eyed Willie's skeleton aboard the Inferno, one of the skeletons of the pirates has his hand against his neck, which implies that the pirate may have choked to death. If so, it's most likely that he may have been poisoned by One-Eyed Willie. On an internet website called Imagine Casting, which members can make up their own cast in films, a spin-off film, which is a prequel to the film following Chester Copperpot as searches for One-Eyed Willie's treasure was submitted, and on the website, actor Charles Dance was cast as Chester Copperpot. Much of the theme music for the film comes from the 1948 Adventures of Don Juan, starring Errol Flynn. Sloth is seen in his dungeon room watching a similar swashbuckling film from the 1940s and 50s on TV, imagining himself as a hero like Flynn, as evidenced by his sliding and slicing down the sail of the pirate ship near the end of the movie, which is also from another Errol Flynn movie. In the 1992 broadcast of the film in the UK, the scene in which Andy screams when the Goonies discover Chester Copperpot's skeleton was cut, and it was cut from the Goonies approaching Copperpot's skeleton, which Mikey says, "Look, you guy, a lantern. Somebody must have been here before us," to Chunk, crying as he continues telling his life story to the Fratellis. The scene was left intact and uncut in the 1988 ITV broadcast. The novelization was done by James Caan for this film. The scene which Jake Fratelli is found hanged in his jail cell, which he pretends to have committed suicide and overpowers the guard, was edited in the 1988 broadcast in the UK. It cuts from the guard saying, "You two down there, hey turkey," to the next scene, which Francis Fratelli is seen pouring a ring of gasoline around the front entrance of the jail. The film has mild swearing, like the other Steven Spielberg-produced Chris Columbus-scripted films of that year, such as Young Sherlock Holmes, and both films also have pipe organs. Data idolizes James Bond, and Steven Spielberg and Columbus are huge Bond fans, and Holmes has much gadgetry on his person, like Data. The book used the word omen, and Richard Donner directed The Omen. The book also describes one of the characters as a Superman to Holmes. This may be an in-joke to Donner, who directed The Goonies and Superman. The film is actress Sophia Myles' favorite film. It also has horror undertones. Jake Fratelli faking his suicide, light streaming through gaps in the walls lighten the otherwise movie darkness, dust in the air, floorboards creaking for added impact. It sets an uneasy tone, and this is thoroughly ramped up when the Fratellis turn up. Mama Fratelli, whom spat out a threat in her perfectly gruff voice, Data almost falling down on a trap of some metal spikes, and Chunk's confession scene, and the Goonies finding a frozen corpse in a refrigerator. David Gruzin's exquisite score, which is playful and melodic, the Fratellis locking Sloth in the basement, the brutal traps in which kill the Goonies at any moment, and the sense of unease and danger. Now, Richard Donner was actually in this film as a gray-haired sheriff on the quads in the final scene. According to international maritime salvage law, the rights to a salvage vessel and its contents go to the person or persons who first successfully brings something off the vessel in question. Since Mikey brought the jewels off the ship, the Inferno and everything on it belongs to him. The kids who played the Goonies were allowed to bring some of their families onto the final scene where they were reunited. Also in the novelization of the movie, it confirms that Chunk's parents actually do adopt Sloth, going so far as to throw him a bar mitzvah. Some of the crew members played extras in the film. One cameraman played Mouse's father, another played Dead Man in the Freezer, and an assistant director plays one of the cops on the ATV scooters on the beach at the end. The Lou Gehrig baseball card that Mikey finds on Chester Copperpot's body is worth $275,000 at auction in mint condition. That's really expensive. In the novelization of the film, which Mickey finds One-Eyed Willie's skeleton, he discovers One-Eyed Willie has an asthma inhaler, which Mikey suffers from asthma, and this leads Mikey to believe that he is One-Eyed Willie's reincarnation, and that it was his destiny to find One-Eyed Willie's treasure. When the Goonies first discover the treasure map, they ask Mouth, the only member of the group fluent in Spanish, to translate the Spanish writing on the map to English so they can all understand it. He does, reading aloud the instructions on how to locate the treasure, when he reads it in common rhythmic stanzas. Although it's unlikely that Mouth, someone who the movie has previously shown is prone to make translation mistakes, even under non-poetic, non-rhyming circumstances, would be able to translate the text into English and spontaneously maintain its rhyme. It's not impossible. Many talented translators of rhyming, non-English poetry have managed to maintain the rhyming even after the poetry is translated into English. One famous 20th century example is Richard Wilbur's acclaimed work as a translator of the 17th century comedies by the French playwright Molière, which still rhyme and maintain their cleverness of Wilbur's translations. After Mickey sets off the boulder trap, which would have blocked off the caves and tunnels, preventing anyone from getting through, Mama, Jake, and Fratelli are seen crossing through the tunnel and finding Chester Copperpot's skeleton. The bowling ball that rolls along the railing, which Mikey releases from a tin bucket, which he pulls a cord that falls into another bucket and sets off the contraption that opens the yard gate for Chunk at the beginning of the film, foreshadows the cannonball in the Triple Stones booby trap that Mikey sets off. The skull lamp in Mikey's bedroom and the skeleton scene in the fish tank when Chunk tells Mikey, Brand, and Mouth about the car chase between the Fratellis is foreshadowing Mikey, Brand, Andy, Steph, Data, and Mouth discovering the skeletons of Chester Copperpot, One-Eyed Willie, and the dead pirates in the caves. Also, Mouth is called Mouth because he's smart mouth, and it's also foreshadowed Mouth stuffing a pearl necklace and his jewels in his mouth, which Mama Fratelli pulls the pearl necklace out of his neck, and the jewels come out of his mouth, which Mama Fratelli smacks him on the back of the head. Cyndi Lauper co-wrote the theme song, Goonies Are Good Enough, and shot a music video that features a cameo by the film's executive producer, Steven Spielberg. The 12-minute video basically tells the movie story as a musical. Cyndi Lauper plays Cindy, a new Goonie recruit. The Bangles play pirates, and Andre the Giant plays Sloth. Now I'd like to find that video. That would be cool. During filming, Steven Spielberg and Richard Donner sent the boys to the Dodger Stadium for Michael Jackson's Victory Concert. Producer Trademark, which is Steven Spielberg, which Data had the belt that had 007 inscribed on it. He also listens to the James Bond theme before sliding on the rope over to Mikey's. Now let's talk about some of the soundtrack moments on the film.
But the worst thing I ever done, I mixed up all this fake puke at home, and then I went to this movie theater, hid the puke in my jacket, climbed up to the balcony, and then I made a noise like this. And then I dumped it over the side on all the people in the audience. Then this was horrible. All the people started getting sick and throwing up all over each other. I never felt so bad in my entire life.
I'm beginning to like this kid.
When the boys are sitting in the living room watching MTV, they weren't actually watching the Cyndi Lauper Good Enough video, which was developed 6 months after filming wrapped up. The music that plays on Data's stereo when he swings through the front door of Brand's and Mikey's house early in the film is a James Bond theme song composed by Monty Norman. 4 years after the film's release, Robert Davi would play the main antagonist of the 1989 Bond film, License to Kill. As mentioned elsewhere, a song called Eight Arms to Hold You was made for the film. Eight Arms to Hold You was also the working title for the Beatles movie Help. The octopus scene was taken out, and the filmmakers were convinced that the song would be a hit, so it was pressed as a 12-inch dance single, and it sold miserably due to lack of promotion. It has become one of the rarest, most valuable Goonie-related items in existence. In an era when most Spielberg films were scored by the likes of John Williams, Jerry Goldsmith, or Bruce Broughton, it was somewhat surprising that The Goonies was scored by Dave Grusin, who in 1985 was 51 years old and was a well-respected multiple Oscar nominee. His most high-profile scores to that point had been his four Academy Award nominees, Heaven Can Wait, The Champ, On Golden Pond, and Tootsie, plus popular and critically acclaimed works such as 3 Days of the Condor and Justice for All and The Goodbye Girl. And so very little in his filmography indicated that he was capable of the large-scale adventure score of a film like The Goonies. The score is anchored by a quintet of central themes. The first and most famous is not actually the theme for the Goonies themselves, but instead the theme for the Fratelli family, an upbeat, infectious scherzo. The theme is an absolute delight, rhythmic, memorable, and is a delicious sense of fun and adventure. Grusin uses a full orchestra augmented by a tickling synth percussion section and drum pads, and peppered with the standout moments of flourishing brass, the dancing woodwinds, and effervescent string runs, which scamper down and up and down scales, which consummate ease. It first appears in the opening cue of the Fratelli chase, which accompanies the car chase. Next, then there's the slapstick makeover cue of the harpsichord and the rousing They're Here and Skull Cave chase. The Goonies themselves have a warm, nostalgic theme for searching strings and brass, which first appears in the third cue, The Goondocks, and is intended to reflect their friendship, closeness, and longing to remain at their seaside home. Then we get the quirky, comedic march of Data, the Chinese-American genius with a penchant for inventing disastrously ill-conceived gadgets, crops up once or twice, notably at the end of the opening Fratelli chase. He's also a short round. Finally, the theme for One-Eyed Willie and the concept of the long-lost pirate treasure permeates much of the score, conceived for twinkly chimes, subtle electronics, and a minor key string wash. It captures this sense of mystery inherent in the story of the famed buccaneer, as well as the lead carry Mikey Walsh's obsession with him. First appears in Map and Willie, and then goes through Doubloon, Wishing Well, and the Fratellis Find the Coin, Triple Stones in a Ball, and the Inferno. So with this great amount of score, the performance of that theme in the conclusive No Firm and Pirate Ship is one of the score's highest points. Also, there's some of the horror aspects of the music that Grusin includes, which is The It, $50 Bills, and A Stiff goes full on Bernard Herrmann, while in Playing the Bones, Grusin breaks out of the eerie sounds of the pipe organ and combines it with tribal percussion to an excellent effect. So today, I'll be playing a few cues from the film. First, I'll play the Fratelli chase, the Goondocks, the Doubloon, the Lighthouse, and It All Starts Here. I hope you enjoy these exciting and wonderfully mysterious cues that Dave Grusin presents to us. Next, I'd like to play Skull and Signature, The Wishing Well, and the Fratelli Fight, Oath, and Booby Traps. They're Here and Skull Cave Chase. These cues really amp up the action for the film, also providing the key mystery elements for our treasure-seeking youngsters. I hope you can enjoy these.
Thank you.
Sadly, we've come down to another end of Soundtrack Alley. I'd like to thank Alexander Schiebel for composing Soundtrack Alley's intro theme. You can find his work on xanderscores.com. So lastly today, I'll be playing The Bones, The Inferno, One-Eyed Willy, Treasure Data, and Mouth Walk the Plank, The Fighting Fratellis, No Firm and Pirate Ship, and finally, End Titles. I hope you've enjoyed this episode as much as I have. I always appreciate this film, and I've got some great films lined up over the next few weeks, as well as some excellent interviews. You can find me at SoundtrackAlley.net, email me at SoundtrackAlley@yahoo.com, find me at SoundtrackAlley.podbean.com, on Twitter, I'm at RandallAndrews1, I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and on iTunes and Stitcher. And you'll find all those links in the show notes. And so, until next time, happy listening.
Thank you. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to Soundtrack Alley, the podcast. I hope you take the time to review my podcast on iTunes or even listen to it on Podbean. With your review, it helps me get noticed on iTunes. Thank you so much. Have a good day. Thank you for listening to Soundtrack Alley Spotlight. If you are on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show. Also, if you want to leave a comment, question, or concern, please email me at soundtrackalley@gmail.com and enjoy looking at my blog at soundtrackalley.com.